This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. In the next couple of minutes, we're expected to head out to Arrowhead and hear from the Chiefs general manager, Brett Veach, right here on 96.5 The Fan. We are a week out, a week from tonight, the 2025 NFL draft. The Chiefs, of course, slated to select at pick 31. And it is that time of the year, frankly, where Brett Veach does his pre-draft conference call. And we are going to head out to there as soon as he is available.
Usually that's the hot zone part of the conversation, yeah, for sure. Right? Maybe tells us where he thinks the depth in this draft is. And if he doesn't say running back and defensive line, then he's probably just not telling the truth based on what everyone else is saying in this draft. So yeah, a lot to get into. I like hearing Brett Veach's thoughts a week before. Sometimes I still think Brett Veach better than he used to be. I think from a PR angle, like from an internal angle, from we like, I think sometimes he accidentally lets slip the way he's actually thinking versus, you know, how people try to hide or protect or block that information a little bit. I think sometimes he accidentally, you know, lets it slip a little bit. That's all where they might actually be picking. So yeah, looking forward to hearing from Brett Veach. As soon as he joins the press conference, we'll go out there.
All right, let's head out there right now. As a matter of fact, you're listening to Brett Veach coming up here on 96.5 The Fan.
I can't see anybody.
Don't come up when they talk.
Okay. Gotcha.
We see you, Brett. We see you.
We're good?
Yep, you're good.
Oh, okay, well, appreciate everyone logging on. I don't know who's on yet because I can't see anybody, but I'm sure that when you ask your questions, I'll see you. But excited for next week in the kickoff of the 2025 NFL draft. Super exciting time for my staff, Chiefs Kingdom. And again, really look forward to this next few days. I want to start off by thanking my scouting staff. They do a tremendous job, our coaching staff, all the people in the building that help us through this process. There's a ton of work that goes into this. And again, we're super excited. And with that, I'll take your questions.
We'll go ahead and start with Adam Teicher.
Brent, how are you doing today?
Good, Adam. How are you doing?
Good. Wanted to ask you about three of the free agents you signed. And what you liked about them, how you see them fitting in, that kind of thing. And those would be Elijah Mitchell, Christian Fulton, and Jalen Moore. And Sid, I'll have a second question as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, Adam, every free agency process, I think the goal and the objective is always, it's always the same, yet how you go about it is always different. And the goal and the objective is always to position yourself and your team so that when you get to the draft, you can unlock the full potential of your board and not have to be stressed out and take the best player available. And now how you go about that is different every year, right? I mean, depending on your cash and cap and what players are available and how many players you're losing and what have you. So it's a unique challenge every year. And I think, though, over the years, one thing that we've shown is we're going to put a high priority on offensive line, defense line. And you start off with Jalen Moore. I don't think it's a secret. We want to get some stability there at the left tackle position. He's a guy that I think the only downside was just the lack of starts during his career. Now, when you consider the fact that he played behind a first ballot Hall of Fame player in Trent Williams, you can see why. But he's athletic. He's a smart kid. And, you know, we did a lot of work on him during the pre-draft process years ago. Always had a liking, taking a liking to the kid. Thought he had a game that translates. And credit to him that when he had a chance to go out there and log 6-7 starts last year, he did a really good job. Now the next step is maintaining that level of play throughout the course and the duration of a season. But again, we're super excited to add him and hopefully provide some stability to that left side of the line. I've said over the last few months, I think that, you know, we've done a really good job. Obviously our interior has been strong the last few years. We did lose Joe, and that late season move with Kingsley late in season, his start in Denver was promising. And so we think we have some flexibility there with those guys. But again, I think the ongoing effort and pursuit to just get more consistent play on that left side was important to us. And I don't think that process will stop. We'll continue in the draft to address the offensive line. And then on the defensive side, losing LJ last year, and Jalen Watson was having a really good year. He got hurt. Nazi got hurt last year. We had some guys get banged up. The way Steve does things on that back end requires a lot of depth there. You can never have enough good corners. Christian was a guy that we liked coming out as well. In fact, I think it was a COVID year. He was right there. And I think he went a few picks before we ended up, I think, selecting Willie Gay, but a guy we did a lot of work on and liked him. And then Elijah Mitchell, you know, maybe listen, we're going to the well again. We had a good experience a few years back when we had, done a lot of work on, Jerick McKinnon, and he was a guy that had a great career in Minnesota, went to the Niners and just couldn't get healthy, couldn't get right, was always banged up. And we're like, you know, this kid's still young, and although he's battled a lot of injuries, we've always liked the tape, we've always liked the person, great kid. Similar skill set in a sense. He's explosive. He has great hands. I'm sure you even heard Kyle Shanahan talk about when he's healthy, how good he is. And I think it's no secret with him that he's got to stay healthy. And so again, I think probably the success we had with McKinnon gave us some confidence to try it again. You know, he'll have to get through training camp and get through a season healthy. But our trainers like what they saw in regards to his rehab from his injury last season. And so hopefully we can get him on the field, keep him on the field, because I think when he's healthy, he provides an explosive dynamic in both the run and pass game.
Okay. And you kind of touched on this a minute ago, but I wanted to ask you also, your goal kind of going into every draft is to not have obvious needs like you mentioned earlier. Where do you feel the roster is right now, understanding you have 8 draft picks coming up plus whatever's left in free agency?
Yeah, I think there's always, of course, room for improvement. I think that just from a 1,000-foot view, I mean, it's probably safe to say, and you guys know I always give you probably too much information on these Zooms, but I mean, O-line, D-line, and corner, I think the draft has some numbers. I mean, the O-line numbers are probably down a tick, but I think everyone has talked about the depth in the draft at the defensive line position, in particular defensive end. And then I think corner does have some sneaky depth there in the middle of the draft class. Maybe not as many high-end guys, but I think in years past, but I think there is some value there. And the level of drop-off, I think, holds from 2 to 3 to even into the early parts of 4. So, you know, I think that would be a logical landing spot for us early in the draft. But I think we're always in the mindset, too, to, you know, add players that we have graded as impact players, and certainly wouldn't shy away from continuing to add to our receiver room as well. So I do think that, again, you can't accomplish everything exactly you want to in free agency just because you don't have an endless amount of resources. But I do think we put ourselves in a position so that, you know, if we're sitting there at 31, you know, we certainly have a need for O-line, D-line, corner, receiver. So all options are open, and I guess we'll see how it kind of shakes out.
Okay, great. And hey, you never give too much information on these things, so
no, don't I know,
worry
right?
about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we'll go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Sid, I'll have a quick second question if I could. Brett, I was just wondering about Trey Smith, where that stands, your comfort level, if he needs to play on the tag, and optimism level for potentially getting something done by that deadline.
Hopefully we get that done. I mean, there's no lack of interest or will or desire on our end. And we did have, Pete, a ton of talk with Torrey and Jimmy, his agents at the combine. Those conversations continue on to the owners' meetings. And so now also CAA has a ton of draft prospects, and they have a ton going on. So, you know, we've exchanged multiple phone calls, multiple emails. And, you know, my guess is once the draft's over and our focus is back on taking care of the players that are here and trying to get those guys locked up, and CAA on their end, I mean, they have, again, they're one of the leading agencies in regards to the players they produce every year. So I'm sure once things settles down on both ends, we'll be in a position to continue this dialogue and hopefully make some progress there. But there's no secret there. We'd like to get Trey locked up.
And then just a quick one on the draft. You're always forward about potential round one grades that you guys have. So I was wondering about that. And then also something that you always mention each year is the hot zone. So just number of round one grades, if you're willing to share that, and then where you kind of foresee the value in this one.
Yeah, P, I think it's probably a tick down. I think typically in years past, that number has been anywhere from 15 to 18, even 19. I think the last I checked, it was right around 12 or 13. So it is lower, although I will say this, in that secondary wave of guys that, you know, are in the late round, high two consideration, that number's probably a little higher. So hopefully that provides a little bit more flexibility on both ends. So I think that top end number is just a tick down from years past. And I think we have a pretty consistent game plan year in and year out. And if one of those guys, however unlikely it is that we have in that 12 or 13 or 14 number range, if they were to fall into a reasonable landing spot, I'm sure we would make some calls. And typically it's unlikely to happen, but we all know a few years ago it did happen with Trent McDuffie, and we were able to do that. So that will be kind of our mindset again, and we'll see if it works out. I don't think it'd make too much sense for us to you know, we need all these picks, and we need to add depth on multiple fronts and the secondaries and receivers. So trading multiple picks to just get one piece doesn't really make sense. But I think if a guy we really like does fall into the 20s and it's reasonable, I think we'll be aggressive. Otherwise, I think we'll be happy with adding players at each round and multiple players in three.
Thanks.
We'll go next to Sam McDowell.
Hey, Brett. I'll have a couple of things as well. Wanted to ask you about left tackle. You talked about Jalen Moore, but is that still a position that you would foresee addressing in this draft?
Yeah, I think O-line and D-line is always going to be at the forefront of where we are in regards to roster composition. And again, we're really excited about Jalen Moore and what he can bring to the table. Again, small sample size, but it's been really good, and we're excited to work with him. But it's a long season, and, you know, Jalen's under a 2-year contract. So, you know, and Juwan's getting toward the tail end of his contract too. So you always have to have one eye on the future, and one eye on the present and one eye on the future. So I think that obviously, any chance that you have to draft a guy that you can project to be a starting left tackle, you do that. And they're really hard to come by. I mean, it's not one of those things that, I mean, look, you could hit on any position throughout the course of the draft, but consistently those slam dunk franchise tackles they're typically top 15, top 20 picks. So if one does slide, or if you're able to get one, even in later rounds that you think has a higher upside than some of those prospects in past years, you don't ever shy away from that position.
And then secondly, I wanted to ask you about, you know, this is like three times in 4 years where you've lost somebody in the front office of the draft. I formula, I guess, changes for you. The process changes for you. Obviously, the first one you've done without Mike. What's the process like year to year whenever you do have guys that are pretty influential in the room that you know, you go without?
It's funny because I just joked about that the other day with Ryan being in Chicago and Brent Tillis in Carolina and now Mike in Tennessee. I think that as the years go on and I keep losing key members of our personnel staff, the time period when we shut down meetings is getting pushed back sooner and sooner, because we're all such good friends and we talk a lot that I joke with the guys that, you know, pretty soon it's just going to be me here by myself in a room, because we talk to each other so much all the time that I'm worried about all of us having the exact same draft boards and all of our stuff getting out there. But it's a unique dynamic, but certainly happy and excited for the work those guys have done and the jobs they've done. I think each individual has done great jobs in regards to, you know, what Poles has done and what Brand has done early on. And I think Mike's going to do a slam dunk job there. So I'm excited for all those guys. It is different. Fortunately, that we do a great job, and it's no different than putting a roster together of players. I mean, you have to have a roster of personnel members. But the guys like Chris Shea and Mike Bradway and Tim Terry and Ryan Nutt, and then have a really strong group of young scouts that are working their way up too. And kind of like that mentality, when one player gets injured or moves on, the next one steps up, and we've had a really good group to work with, and they've all stepped up and done a tremendous job.
Thanks, Brad.
Let's go next to Jesse Noel.
Hey, Brad, I know things are going to change and things happen that you don't expect in the draft, but with your first round pick in particular, what is the likelihood that you guys might look at trading back with that particular pick?
I certainly have a tendency to be on the aggressive side and move up. Although it's interesting, as I just mentioned to Pete before, the numbers are a little bit down in regards to that top end, usually being 15 to 17. They're more from in that 12 to 14 range. So, and then as I mentioned, Jesse, the secondary stack is a little bit bigger. So I think that there is probably, just from a sure number standpoint, more of a likelihood that could happen when you have, again, on the front end, the numbers, meaning 7.5 or higher on our grading system being low, but then that next 7.0 to 6.5 grading system, the numbers being higher. I think that from that standpoint, I think that could be in our wheelhouse and it might make sense to us. So we'll have to see. I think there's always, or at least it worked out that way in the last few years, been one guy. Worthy was one of those guys last year, but we'll see. But, you know, I know that I've shown to be more aggressive, but I'm certainly open to it. And if it makes sense for us and we can acquire additional picks, that, you know, I'd be all for it.
We'll go next to Nick Jacobs.
And Sydney, I'll have a follow-up if I can, please. Brett, my first question for you, with NIL and transfer portal, how much has that impacted you guys from a talent pool perspective? And are there any other ways it's impacted you that you haven't foreseen?
That's a good question. So I think we kind of started to see a shift in the dynamics with the draft during the COVID period, when players got an additional year. And now with the NIL, it certainly impacts the later rounds. There's a lot of motivation and incentive for players to just stay in college. And, you know, a lot of these players may end up doing better staying an extra year, as opposed to maybe getting drafted late and getting cut or what have you, and not making it. So it certainly impacts us from a number standpoint late in the draft. And then the numbers that we do have to work with late in the draft, we're dealing with players that are a little bit older now. In fact, every year, you know, when we go through our process and we put a prospect on the board, you know, we'll start with the combine works. I mean, this is our third wave of film. You know, or that last wave of film, we'll go back, and if it's the third or fourth time watching a prospect, we'll do the combine. But we always put up, you know, his age, birth date, how old he'll be on day one of the season. And it seems like every year you're dipping into the 24, 25-year-old rookies. And, I mean, we have multiple players on our team that would still be young in this draft class, whether that be a George or a Felix or what have you. So I do think, you know, Nick, you're starting to see that the numbers are a little bit shorter and the ages are a little bit higher. And so it makes it a little bit more challenging to identify guys in that later round, but we'll see how it works out moving forward here. But they have a lot going on the college side, and some of which I'm not too involved with, or I haven't paid too much attention with. all I can speak on is my end. And to your point, numbers are down and ages are up.
You're listening to Brett Veach, Chief General Manager, 1 week out of the NFL draft right here on 96.5 The Fan.
I knew someone was going to ask me that. I think we have 202 right now, which is maybe a tick high, but we've been anywhere from 85 to 210 over the years, 185, 210. So I think we're right around, you know, 202. So I think we have plenty of names to work with, and hopefully we're able to execute our game plan as the names come off and you know, they'll work those position groups throughout the course of the 3 days next week.
Okay. Matt, Derek, go ahead.
Hey, Brett. Appreciate your time as always.
Yeah.
How much do you look at, you know, next year's class and even, you know, maybe less so 2027, but certainly 2026 as far as just big picture depth where there might be pockets of players next year versus this year? And obviously thinking like left tackle, doesn't seem like there's a lot of options this year, but how much do you look at it next year and see like, wait a minute, there's a position group that might be really rich a year from now, but maybe not as rich this year?
I don't do a lot of that. And I think for the quarterback position, that could be the one position that you could answer that differently. But in general, there are so many variables in regards to looking ahead. And if you have a guy that you like, or you feel like it's reasonable in regards to what you'd have to do to get someone that you like throughout the course of the draft, I think you always focus on the present. You know, there's been many times where there's high level prospects that have poor years or they get hurt, or maybe, you know, where you're going to be picking in the draft. And, you know, now you throw in the NIL, as Nick just mentioned, some of these really good juniors, I mean, they're staying. And we saw the Penn State tackle from a year ago stay an extra year. So if you start playing that game too often and you throw in the fact that, oh, this kid's a really good lineman, a junior, and then he gets money to stay, or, you know, again, you don't know where you're picking or if that player gets hurt during the course of the year or if you have young guys step up. So I just think you focus on the present. Now, I will say once the draft ends and once we all take a break and come back for the OTAs in the spring, you start getting aggressive and looking ahead. And that's very beneficial for your free agency plan and your roster building aspect of once you go through the season and you're trying to, you know, bridge the free agency plan with the draft plan. I mean, you get a head start on that as soon as possible. But as far as kind of utilizing that with the current draft, I think you'd probably be, in my opinion, you know, I don't have all the answers, but in my opinion, be a little bit more dangerous.
And on the offensive side, you've added some pieces, obviously, at receiver and running back, but obviously I'll be bringing back Hollywood too. Where do those two positions stack up for you as far as draft needs, and how do those boards look as far as, you know, available players this year?
I missed the first one. You said running back and then
wide receiver.
Yeah. The running back class is probably the deepest class in the draft. I mean, I think you can get a really good player from rounds 1 through 5. So, I mean, look, with all these players, you're a few bad weeks away from having no depth at all. I mean, I know I've always said the story a few years back of that defensive end position where we had a 2 or 3 week span where we lost multiple guys. And, you know, last year, Pacheco got hurt early on. And I mean, we always want to surround Pat with playmakers. And, you know, the more talented wideouts you can throw on the field at one time is something important to us. And depth at running back. And look, this kickoff role too. I mean, ideally, you know, it would be advantageous for us to identify a receiver and or running back that has explosive playmaking ability on both ends. Remigio did a great job, but again, we're always pushing the envelope to get 1% better. And if we can add another dynamic element to both return phases, that would be something that would make sense. So it's not just wanting to continue to add explosive playmaking at the running back or the receiver position. It's also the return game. And so I do feel good though about that running back stack. Again, I think it's probably a consensus throughout the draft community and the work that you guys have all done, that there's a ton of running backs. And, you know, I think that there'll be a good chance that one of these picks ends up being one of those players, just because there's so many of them, and they're all really good. And the discrepancies between the running back you have in fourth or fifth is really close, or fourth and third is really close. So I think it's a good likelihood that, you know, one of those players ends up on our roster, and hopefully they're a dynamic returner as well.
Thanks, Brett.
Let's go next to Sarin, and then we've got three more hands up to wrap us up.
Thanks. And I'll have a follow-up too, if I could. First of all, I know Jesse asked you about trading down, Brett, in the first round, but overall, you've said that, you know, you've made your calls, or will, before the draft rolls around, everybody, and you kind of know who's looking to move up and down going into it. But I'm just curious, during the course of the draft, how many times do you get the opportunity to trade down? How many times does the phone ring? Are you fielding 3-4 each round? Is it once? Do you have to drum it up yourself? Like, how busy is it within the draft on getting those opportunities? I know it's not your preference, right? You've said you'd like to be aggressive, but how many times does the opportunity come around?
I don't think it's as common as people think. When you complete a round and you kind of look at what's on the board or what's coming up, you know, it's probably a little bit easier to say, well, we should have just traded down. But I think that's a good point. I think the question is, you know, could you have traded down? There certainly have been situations that, you know, either we've executed, and it's been very few, obviously. We've certainly traded more up than down. I think there was one or two examples of where we did that. But I would say, you know, we've been picking late every round. So maybe those teams that are in the top end of the round or the middle of rounds, they get a little bit more action in regards to phone calls throughout the week. But I would say over the last few years, that first day, there may have been one draft where we received multiple calls about trading down and we didn't do it. But other than that one year in the last 4 or 5 years, I don't remember getting a ton of calls on day one. A little bit more on day two. You're going to get a lot more calls in day three, just because the grade discrepancies are all over the board. But I do think in general, the numbers of calls that you get asking to trade down are lower, at least in my experience. You know, we certainly, I think, do a pretty good job of filling calls, and it's not like we're not answering calls or we're not making calls. You know, a lot of that could have to do with, you know, day one and two, your picks are so late, and those teams may feel like the last chance to get the guy they want in one is to move up higher, or in round two, it, you know, that once you get to that 50, 60 man cutoff point. And so we've been picking so far behind that, that, you know, that could be a reason too. And in those years that I think a common topic of trading up for the quarterback to get the fifth year option, I don't think that's worked out. Those quarterbacks either didn't go or went higher. So, you know, maybe this is a year that happens, and there's a team that wants to draft early and get a really good player, and then maybe come up and draft a quarterback and get that fifth year. I think that scenario, I actually talked about that because every year someone says to me in the draft room, we'll just trade back for a team that wants a quarterback. And I'm like, that hasn't happened yet. We've been hearing that every year, and that hasn't happened yet. So maybe this will be the year. So without giving any of my secrets away, I think the only thing I would say definitively is that we're not going to draft a quarterback in one. So we'll certainly have the phones open, and we'll see how that goes.
All right. And then you made the statement going into free agency that, hey, the draft is going to be our free agency. Mm-hmm. One, I think some people might have felt like maybe you're a little more active than you thought you'd be. I guess I'd just first say, did it go the way you thought as you were looking at it? Is the draft still a big part of your free agency? And does that maybe give you more incentive to need more picks, to need to trade down? Would it be more of a game plan this time? Obviously, it's got to be the right deal, right? I know you don't just set sail and say, I'm going to trade down no matter what. Has it lived up the way you thought it would entering free agency? And would that be part of your game plan moving into the draft?
Yeah, I think we knew early on in free agency with what we were facing. And look, we're, as I mentioned to Pete, once this process ends, we'll be in discussions with Trey, trying to get him done. And then I'm sure at some point here, you know, George and Trent, you know, we're going to have dialogue with them. But to your point, as the years go on and if we hope to keep this winning tradition up and have sustained success, it only becomes more difficult. And knew early on that we would be limited. And, you know, that was obviously the reason why we had a make that trade with Chicago with Tooney. I mean, that was a player that we loved, and it was gut wrenching to have to do that, but you had to do it. And so you're only going to have a limited opportunity to do some things. So we tried to cover up some of the holes in regards to just some stability at left tackle. Corner depth is always a big need, and there are two prime positions that go high in the draft. So let's have a plan to get a couple of those positions that we feel good about now and then go into the draft. But as you mentioned, Seren, I mean, the more picks you have, the more players and the more depth you can have at these positions. And so to your point, I think it does make sense. And because, you know, you can easily say we need two interior defensive linemen, another defensive end, two corners, another running back, and you know, two or three more offensive linemen. So, I mean, you need a ton. And I don't think I ever look at our roster and think like we're good. I feel like there's nothing else we can do. So the more players to have, you know, the more depth you can add on the team. And again, you never know where you're going to need the depth. Every time we go into a season feeling good about a position, that position is the one position, like receiver last year, like we are loaded at wideout. And then just like Deanna a few years ago, we get to week three, four of the season, and we're making trades for DeAndre Hopkins, just, you know, Juju Smith, we're trying to figure out where we're going to get receivers. And so like every position, if you get a good player, it doesn't matter whatever you think your perceived depth is, it's not going to be there by the middle of the season. So just stick to your board and draft the best player, but you can't do that unless you, you know, get some of this knocked out in free agency. So yeah, the more players, the better. And I think that you have to look at these things to sustain depth throughout the season, and trading back and acquiring more picks is certainly a way to do that.
Let's go to Vahe. Go ahead, Vahe.
Hey, Brett, thank you. Hey, Sid, I'll have a follow-up, too. Brett, you know, obviously you've alluded to this yourself. You've become a bit known for being transactional and aggressive, and you guys have prospered by it. I wonder if you just might speak to from where that comes and how you've known that that's the right and good way to operate, and how antsy do you get if you're not doing something?
Well, I think it's one of those things where, like, you spend so much time watching all these prospects, and my guys are in the room with me every day, and we take a great deal of pride and respect for these late round picks too, and we attack them with as much attention to detail as we do the you know, the top of the rounds, and so then you get in that mindset where it's like you do the work, and you know, you trust in the work you do. And I do think, though, that it's good to have some different opinions around me. And maybe you guys haven't seen this on the outside, but I do think, in as opposed to years past, that, you know, there's a little bit more patience with me. But I just think it stems from, like, we did all this work. We did it for a reason. Right. And we're going to do all this work. And if we have a guy, let's go get him. You know, maybe taking the stance a little of, you know, if we're going to not have or not be steadfast in our convictions, and then just, you know, it on one end, the more numbers you have and the number of tickets you have in this lottery, the better. But on the other end, there's that element of trusting what you see. And if you're going to do all this work, you might as well go get a guy you like, as opposed to saying, well, I don't believe what I see, so I'd rather just take a few guys, because a few guys is better than the one guy I like. So, but it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a balance of, you know, controlled discipline. And so I think I've slowly over the years gotten a little bit better with that. It's just one of those things where I feel like you watch so much tape. It's like, well, hell, just go up there and get the guy you want. If you watch it and you believe in it, and just do that. And it was kind of the way with, you know, Patrick, and it was the same way with Trent, and it was the same way with all these guys. And it's not always right, though. And so I think being selective, I think the process is right. It's just being more selective on when you do it. You don't need to do it every single round. And I think that's one thing. I mean, we can always get better at things, and I'm no different. That's one of the things that the guys have helped me with, and just being more selective in that process.
And the follow-up just is, you alluded to it, I think, in the context of left tackle particularly before, but, you know, one eye to the future and one eye to the present at all times. Can you describe how you apply that thinking to the draft? I mean, obviously you have immediate needs, but obviously it's a long-term game.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's well, I think it starts with free agency. And so I don't think you want to put yourself in a position where, you know, we look at free agency like pretend there's no draft. We have to go out and line up week one and play. I mean, what do we need? And so bringing more in and having some depth at corner and adding a another playmaker at running back were things that we thought would be beneficial, but we're certainly not where we need to be. And thankfully we have the draft. And so now when you get to these picks, you know, you're going to always stick to the value on the board, but you know, within that value, you're going to stick to the premium position. So, you know, O-line and D-line, I mean, if all things are equal, you're going to always defer to that and you're going to continue to build the lines. And so, like I said, with Juwan being toward the tail end of his contract and Jalen being on a smaller contract, I mean, those things, I mean, these years pass by quick. And before you know it, we'll be sitting here talking about talking on a Zoom before the 2026 draft. So can never have enough of these guys. And then those positions like O-line, D-line, and corner, they're hard to find. They're not available in free agency for the most part. I mean, you typically don't find left tackles in free agency or starting corners and stuff, certainly not pass rushing three techs. So you get a chance at any point in the draft where you like a guy, you take him and can never have enough of those guys.
You're continuing to listen to Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach speak about the draft 1 week from tonight. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, Brett, thanks again. Yeah. I have quick questions as well. The first one is, when you talk about the defensive line, particularly interior and edge, just what intrigues you most about that part of this year's draft class? And is it somewhat similar to your guys' feeling about running back?
I think the defensive end is. So the defensive line class in general is good. I think that's probably driven more so by the depth at D end. I think there's a lot of D ends, and I think that you know, running backs is certainly, I think, the deepest class in the draft. A close second would be D end. I think the interior defensive line numbers are I think better than most years, but I don't think they come anywhere close to the D-line depth and the corner depth. I think those two are just wow. I mean, you look at the board and those names go from top to bottom. Interior O-line is light. Corner, I think, is actually decent in the middle rounds. I think D-line is okay, but I don't think it's any more or less than any one particular. I think that where you're getting the big numbers from top to bottom are D-end and running backs. And then everywhere else, it's a little bit scattered. Corners, I think, a little meatier in the middle. And then receivers, every year you're going to have numbers. It's just the vision and the plan, how you're going to utilize those guys within your offense. So you're always going to have numbers. I think certainly on – like last year was an extraordinary class, and there's so many receivers taken high. I don't think you're going to see that this year. But you'll see receivers taken every round just because they're always plentiful in regards to numbers. So, so I think that – when you talk about the D-line, I think that that's really getting fueled by the defensive end depth.
Yeah. And secondly, you've just talked before about, you know, learning from discipline and obviously trade philosophy throughout the years. How much does that apply to the top 30 visits or the guys you want to bring in sort of after pro days, after the draft, to sort of learn more about them, whether that's medical, off the field, or obviously just the way they match up with your coaching staff, your scheme?
Are you asking in the context of like trading up or for those guys or just the value of those 30 visits?
Yeah. Just the overall value of the visit and what you try to maybe learn or what you sort of experienced throughout the years that makes those visits maybe more important than maybe they were, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago when you were doing it.
I think, I find every opportunity you have to spend with a player, I find to be valuable. And I know there's some teams that don't even do 30 visits. And, but I'm just kind of a believer, the more you spend time with a prospect, the more you get to know. And even if it's a little bit's better than nothing. And, now the 30 visits we handle in different ways. And so they're, you know, I think the primary focus of the 30 visits are the guys that we really like that did not get invited to the combine. And that's purely for medical. The combine participants all have the same medical evaluation process that is done in Indianapolis. We all get that information. We look at it, we talk to our doctors, and we talk about the risks and guys that we're concerned about. However, there's a ton of guys that don't get invited to the combine. They have no medical on. So if you like that guy, and I mean, that's varying ranges. I mean, there's guys that don't get invited to the combine in years past that we had in the third round. And there's a ton of guys we had in the sixth or seventh, and we just bring them in just in case we draft them late. So that's probably the primary reason we bring those guys in. And then there are guys that, for some reason at the combine, we just, the combine's weird too, because everyone does these formal interviews, right? And you get 20 minutes, and sometimes a player comes 4 minutes late because a team's holding them. And sometimes the computer's frozen, or sometimes a coach goes off in a different tangent and they start talking about stuff that is cool and funny, but you haven't really learned anything about the player because you're talking about a coach that both of you know, right? And so that 20 minutes goes fast. Now, sometimes these kids are boom, they're right there, and we get right into it. We ask questions about their upbringing and all that kind of stuff. You feel good. There's a lot of guys, though, that you're like, you look and they leave and you're like, I didn't get anything out of that. And some of these guys I want to bring in and learn more. So, I mean, that happens every year. So it's just guys that we just didn't get a great feel for. Or maybe, you know, you only get so many of these formal interviews allotted to you. And that there were probably every year we have like 10 guys that you hand these in, you know, there's a cutoff date. And every year there's always like, oh, we shouldn't have added this guy because we're fine with this guy. We should have added this guy. So then we're like, oh, we'll just bring in for 30, right? No big deal. So sometimes I think people look maybe too far into it, but certainly there's a reason why we're bringing them in. And whether that be, and I'm sure with the players that we just brought in, right? I mean, you're going to get additional medical. So the guys at the combine that need a recheck, whether it be a knee, a shoulder, an ankle, those guys are going to have to come in and get a recheck. So if we can bring those guys in to get extensive time with our doctors, that's important for us. So it starts off with the guys that are not draftable, or excuse me, it starts off with the guys that are not combine invites that we think are draftable, that don't have a medical. And it goes to the guys that we didn't get enough time with. Then it goes to the guys that our docs want to see more on. So we use it in a variety of ways, but those are typically the three buckets that they fall in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Herbie. Go ahead, Herbie.
Hey, good morning, Brett.
Hey, Herbie.
Quick question here. You've mentioned multiple times the depth at defensive end and to an extent, the cornerback position. How much do you feel like the overall depth at those position groups will affect the ultimate decision whether to exercise a fifth-year option on Karlaftis and even McDuffie?
I don't think that it'll affect at all. I think those are players that you want in, you know, in a Kansas City uniform for a long time. And but those are two premium positions, so you can never have enough of those players. But as far as, you know, that altering a decision like a fifth-year option on either of those guys, that I don't think that would come into play.
All right, so that's Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach. A lot there. We're going to react to that as we're a week out from the draft. We're just getting started. Weird start to the show, I understand, but we'll get into it. A lot of things that Veach said when it comes to a few position groups. I think one in particular was very obvious with what he had to say. We'll react to that coming up next right here on Cody.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gold. All right, just getting started here on Cody and Gold. Obviously, the first chunk of the show, hearing from Brett Veach each year right before the draft. He speaks about kind of their thoughts, maybe their plans to a certain extent, and how they view at least the draft class. There's a lot to react to. We'll do that throughout the show today. I promise you we'll talk about the Royals getting swept by the Yankees here in about 10 minutes or so as well. We also have Nate Taylor, who you heard on that conference call, asking a question to Brett Veach. Nate Taylor's going to join us in the studio in the 1 o'clock hour, but there's a variety of ways we can start. I actually want to start with running backs for a second because that was the clearest out of everything he said in terms of how he feels about the running back. A couple things Brett Veach mentioned. He said, look, there's a good chance one of those dudes ends up being on our roster, ends up being one of our selections, right? Said that, you know, the discrepancy between the fourth round guy and the third round guy is not that much. A fifth round guy and a sixth round guy, not that much. Good likelihood one ends up on the roster. And hopefully, he said, one is also a dynamic returner, because he mentioned with the changing kickoff rules how that's always going to be important. So that's nothing. It's always good to hear it from the horse's mouth, if you will. But we've known the running back class is as good as it gets. Out of all the positions.
Correct.
And we've known that the Chiefs want to get more explosive at that position. So that's just confirmation of what we've kind of all assumed. Does it mean they're going to draft one in the second round or first round? No, but they're drafting a running back. There's no question about it.
I think it's interesting that he mentioned anywhere from the first to the fifth round he sees starters. So he's not going to say, no, I won't take Hampton in the first. And my guess is that there's one back that they love, that they would be happy to take earlier, depending on it. But what he'd said later in the presser, which was what he's learning, is I can always trade it for the guy that I love, but I don't have to trade it for the guy I love every time. Sometimes I'm capable or can wait. And so if you can wait or have the opportunity to wait, well, then take that chance and then don't worry about it and figure out kind of where you go from there. And so the way I view that, Gold, at least, is he doesn't have to, he's not ruling out taking one in the second round, but he's fine. If he has to just wait till the third or the fourth, he will. But yeah, I mean, that stood out to me a ton. The defensive end, which we can talk about here in a little bit, defensive line stuff stood out to me a ton, but at least he's saying the right words. A lot of explosive running backs in this draft. So like same thing we've been talking about.
Yeah. The other thing of many that stood out was when he discussed, you know, the overall position groups, right? Offensive line, defensive line, corner, wide receiver. Those are the areas. Doesn't mean those are the only areas that they would target, but that's what he references, individual positions. And you try to read into it a little bit and also not think everything's definitive, right? Doesn't mean just because he said O-line, D-line, corner, wide receiver are areas they could target. It doesn't mean that they're not going to draft more in another area and not end up drafting an offensive lineman or something like that. But I will say, I mean, he spoke for 40 minutes, and you can hear there was certainly some answers that gave us some insight. I thought the running back part was the most interesting of that. Plus the defensive line convo, he said the defensive line class is good. Depth at defensive end, didn't mention defensive tackle as much. Basically said that interior defensive lines are better than most years, but not anywhere close to what they have at edge or even the cornerback depth. So keep that in mind if you're saying, hey, I want them to go get an interior defensive lineman. Based at least what he's saying publicly, they feel that you better go get that guy earlier because yeah, there's not a ton of depth later.
So in fairness, that's the way I take that. Not that they wouldn't take a defensive tackle because they see that as being not deeper or the same level of depth. But instead, if you want a defensive end, he's like, oh, no, I can probably get Scorton in the second round, or I can get this guy I like in the third or whatever else. Mm-hmm. Versus if you want the guys we've talked about, Walter Nolan, Derek Harmon, some of those level of players, they're probably going to be in the first round. Now, look, you and I already thought defensive line in general should be top priority for the first round of the NFL draft. I think specifically probably defensive tackle. And some of that is because I think Chris Jones is getting old or a million other things, right, that just exist in nature that you don't want to deal with or worry about. And so, yeah, I still think defensive tackle is a real possibility early. And it sounds like Brett Veach does not feel way different than that. And I will say the one of the other positive things to hear is that corner's got some depth in the middle. Because that's a position I think that, like defensive line, I'm not really sure you can take too many of them, you know? You can't have too many good corners. You can't have too many good defensive linemen. And, you know, Joshua Williams, I think, could be on, like, roster thin ice. And Watson hasn't been able to stay healthy. I don't think they got the depth there.
Oh, I think Josh Williams making the team. I'm not worried. As far as playing time, I don't know what that'll be, depending on the draft and stuff. But like, he's not. I don't think he's a cut candidate if we're doing that already. They're going to carry how many? Let's see. I'd have to go. How many corners did they carry last year?
He carried five or six. I don't know. I'd have to look
you
at
carry
it.
Carry five or six. And so if you have Trent McDuffie, you have Christian Fulton. Let's say they draft a corner. There's three. Josh Williams. What's his name? I'm forgetting the Nazi Johnson is five. Like I think. Now, you could argue that he doesn't see the field very often. I would be pretty stunned if Josh Williams was a
fourth or fifth round pick, not making any money. It would depend largely on the draft. I don't think
Drafting multiple corners, though, like they got, I mean, as we found out through injury last year, like you got to have five or six of them because somebody's getting hurt. Jalen Watson I didn't even mention him. Sorry. He's got an injury, injury history. So could Josh Williams be like the fourth or fifth corner next year? Sure. By the way, that's good depth if that's the case.
Last year, I think this is the other part about corner for the draft is last year. I thought it became pretty evident before the season. They didn't love any of their corner two options. That's why they went after Fulton, in fairness. But that doesn't mean they love him as corner three either, man. They were trying to do anything to pit those guys up against each other last year. Like, well, can we, you remember to start the year, it's like, it kind of felt like they wanted Nazi Johnson to win it, but he didn't win it. And then they went to Watson and then he got hurt.
Nobody took a stranglehold on it.
Yeah. No. And then like, we started seeing some of the further down depth guys as like possible options just for them. So that's the case. The running back has to be the most encouraging thing.
They're drafting one, man.
You and I, they're taking one. And I think they're taking one in the first four rounds. Like, I know he mentioned the later rounds, but he didn't mention like there was going to be an undrafted guy who's a starting running back in the league like the year
he has mentioned that before. Yeah, he said that he did say, though, the discrepancy between a fourth and a third round, he doesn't think there's much of a gap. So maybe in their mind, if there's, who's available.
I don't think four or five guys, they'd be fine drafting on the board.
It was
That's
interesting.
What I hope it comes down to.
The whole return thing was interesting that he said. So I went and I did some digging real quick. Jordan James from Oregon, not a higher end guy. He's one of the top 10 running backs at the position based on ESPN's rankings. He's got a lot of returning experience. So maybe he's a name to watch in that fourth round where they haven't taken one. And he's like, well, I like what he does, return game as well as what he could do out of the backfield. And that's a tell maybe on who he could potentially look at.
We're going to talk more about what Brett Veach had to say coming up during the Chiefs Red half hour in about 35 minutes or so, including a little update on why maybe things are taking a while on the Trey Smith front, the draft being a big reason for that. So that's coming up in just a bit. But up next, let's talk about the Royals. They get swept by the Yankees, and now this series starting tonight in Detroit feels massive. We'll tell you why that's the case, other than just the standings and everything, next.